Natural World. A palm frond, a seabird with a large bill, baby turtles scooping their way across a sandy beach, and a green lizard.
There's an island in the Caribbean that made such an impression on early European sailors that they called it the Isle of Enchantment.
A bird with a juddering throat.
A lush, exotic landscape teeming with charismatic creatures, many only found on these shores.
We have boas, we have manatees, we have turtles, we have parrots. So diversity is vast here, and I love it.
But this paradise is in danger of being lost. An explosion of development, industry and agriculture is pushing nature to the edges. Now, a dedicated group of naturalists are working tirelessly to protect the island's most threatened wildlife. And they're willing to go to extraordinary lengths to succeed.
Moving two animals that are 600 pounds is dangerous. These animals are fragile, they could die.
The team use science, rehabilitation, and even seduction to help vulnerable species.
We provide the dating service, we provide the room, just for them to make love, sweet love.
The people of this island have woken up to its natural treasures. And now they're fighting to save them.
It's a way of life, it's actually a vocation, it's not a job. So you do it with passion, you do it because you think it's important to do.
This is an island that wants to remain enchanted. This is the island of Puerto Rico.
A small waterfall in the midst of lush rainforest. Puerto Rico, Island of Enchantment. Narrated by David Attenborough. A metallic structure suspended over an enormous disc set into the mountains.
In the heart of Puerto Rico's rainforest, a vast natural sinkhole hides a strange structure. This is the world-renowned Arecibo Telescope. A gigantic metal ear listening for whispers of life from far beyond our planet. Its extraterrestrial mission continues day and night.
Speeded up film of stars in the night sky overhead, and the telescope spinning.
But the forest it lies in echoes with its own alien sounds.
Fluorescent droplets falling from the end of fern fronds, then the moist, speckled skin of a creature.
This might sound like E.T. lost in the woods. But it's actually a tiny frog called the coqui.
The frog's throat billows out like a balloon.
Although it's no bigger than a thumbnail, the male's ear-splitting call has been recorded at over 100 decibels. It's thought to be the loudest frog in the world. The males use their call as a mating song to attract female coquis.
A female leaps onto a leaf and approaches the male, whose throat billows with each call.
Their chorus can be heard all over the island. And the frog's nightly serenade has a special place in the hearts of Puerto Ricans.
Speeded up film of night turning to day over a city. A frog motif on a wall. Then men playing dominoes around a table. A large, intricate mosaic of a frog inlaid into a colourful wall. In a shop, a man holds up an artwork of a frog, Then a man and a woman kiss a tall plastic frog statue.
The Taino tribe, who ruled Puerto Rico over 1,000 years ago, even carved its image into the rocks. And it remains a national symbol to this day.
Once we hear that song up there, we just fell in love with it.
People of all ages trying to recreate the sound.
Coqui, coqui, it's beautiful. It's something that's part of us.
Despite people's fondness for this little frog, they have not always protected its forest home.
The Caribbean, seen from space.
Puerto Rico is 1,000 miles from Florida on the eastern edge of the Caribbean Sea. The main island of the archipelago is only 100 miles long.
Mist clinging over densely wooded hills.
When Columbus first landed here in 1493, it was covered in ancient rainforest. Gradually, as the modern world encroached, the island's natural resources were diminished. By 1900, only 5% of its forests remained. One special creature that can be found nowhere else on the planet was pushed to the brink of extinction.
A green parrot slides down a length of twine to a feeding perch.
The Puerto Rican Amazon parrot. At one point, there were only 13 of these precious birds left in the world. Today, they're so rare that each individual is fitted with a radio transmitter so it can be tracked. And they are still the island's most endangered species.
The gate to a large fenced enclosure is slid open.
The Puerto Rican Parrot Recovery Program is based at a secret location in the rainforest, a captive breeding center for these birds. In specialized enclosures, they're encouraged to mate.
A man sits in front of a bank of split screens.
Their progress is monitored around the clock. The chicks they produce will be released back to the wild. And this year, they plan to let out the largest flock of Puerto Rican Amazons so far into the El Yunque National Forest.
The birds flying around their enclosure. Now someone in a large, fluffy green parrot costume strikes a pose. He flaps his blue-tipped wings.
The man running this rescue mission loves these birds.
He takes off the head.
Jafet Velez Valentin has devoted his entire life to saving Puerto Rico's parrots.
He walks over to a row of cages.
Originally, when I began to work in this program, I thought it was going to be something temporary. But once I start learning about them, working with them in the wild, working with them in captivity, you literally fall in love with the species. And it's a decision I will never, ever regret. We need to have happy, healthy, fertile pairs. If we have that, chicks will be a byproduct. Sometimes we call ourselves matchmakers for parrots, eHarmony for birds. And when you're working with a pair and you're able to study their behavior and finally make a good match, it's great.
A pair in a cage.
But it's not always as simple as it sounds. One of his couples is producing infertile eggs. So he's called on the island's specialist wildlife vet, Dr. Antonio Rivera.
I have the privilege to work with our endangered species. These animals mean a lot. They are part of our nature. They're an icon for all Puerto Ricans. But once we lose a species, it's gone forever. We can't bring it back.
To investigate the parrot's reproductive organs, Antonio needs to sedate the birds. The male is first.
The Puerto Rican parrots are very hard-tempered. They could die in your hands just because they're mad. They don't want you to handle them. I make sure that they're strong, that they're breathing. I try not to stress them too much because they're different. They're very special.
Antonio makes a small incision and then uses a tiny camera probe to inspect its testicles.
A pale pink mound appears on the screen.
That's the testicle there. It's got a great color. The membrane doesn't look inflamed. In general, it looks good.
A few stitches, and he's ready to go. There's nothing wrong with this male. So what about the female?
The anesthetic hood is placed over her head.
She's almost gone.
Examining inside her.
I see the cranial pole of the kidney, and then the ovary should be right there. And there is what it looks like, an undeveloped ovary down there, and that might mean that she's having problems. That's why she's not producing any chicks.
Puerto Rican parrots usually choose one mate for life. But in the case of this pair, Jafet is going to have to intervene.
He holds the unconscious parrot carefully.
The value of the male is very high, so I'm going to divorce them, and I'm going to get another female for him and another mate for her, because probably she will be a great brooder.
By doing this, the healthy male's genes can still be passed on. Hopefully, the female's urge to brood can still be fulfilled. Jafet has already observed her strong maternal nest-building instinct.
I will try to work with her, providing her fertile eggs about to hatch, and she will be our next foster mother.
But there's always a danger that surrogate parents will reject and even destroy their newly adopted eggs.
A young man keeps a close eye on them on one of his screens.
The first 24 hours are critical to find out if a pair will make good foster parents.
From the pair of parrots sitting over the eggs to the sun glinting through silhouetted palm leaves moving in the breeze, now flying over a lush swathe of rainforest bordering a beach and a turquoise sea.
The Puerto Rican mainland has over 300 miles of coastline.
A deserted sandy beach, then rocks.
From rugged, rocky shores,
with waves cascading over them,
to the canals that meander through the mangroves.
Mangroves underwater.
Beautiful beaches and vast beds of seagrass in the shallow seas. This is home to the island's most endangered marine mammal. Puerto Rican manatees cruise these waters, spending most of their time feeding on the seagrass. But while they graze, they're vulnerable to being struck by speeding jet skis and boats.
A jet ski plowing through the water, sending up a trail of white froth behind it. Then a manatee, gently coasting over the seagrasses.
There are fewer than 700 manatees alive today in Puerto Rico. And with so few left, the survival of each individual is important.
A manatee swims away, with its distinctive rounded tail undulating through the water.
Just outside the capital city of San Juan is the Manatee Conservation Center. Tony Mignucci rehabilitates injured and orphan manatees here. He has three pools where manatees in need can be cared for. The smallest pool holds baby Turegua, who became separated from his mother at birth. He's still being fed formula milk six times a day.
As he feeds, he breathes out through moist grey nostrils.
Guacara is in the biggest pool. Unfortunately, he was so badly injured after being hit by a boat that he will never swim well enough to be returned to the ocean. But he is happily spending his retirement playing on his float.
It rests gently beneath his belly.
And in the middle pool are two juvenile manatees that Tony is preparing to return to the wild. Both are getting used to wearing tail collars so that they can be satellite tracked after their release.
In this tank, we have Juiza and Aramana. They were brought in as calves. Aramana, the male, was orphaned by its mother in the town of Dorado 4.5 years ago. Juiza got separated from his mother because of high tide and bad weather, and the mom couldn't find it anymore. So we brought her. She is only 2.5 years old, and she has outgrown the older male. Our last release was 6 years ago, and what's special about this release is this will be our first time releasing a pair together. They have been in the pool bonding for the past 6 months in the hope that they would stay together. If they did, it would be a beautiful story.
Aramana and Luisa need to weigh at least 600 pounds, the weight of three men, before they can be released.
Lettuces are forced into a feeding tube.
So Tony's team of students and volunteers prepare two manatee-sized vegetarian feasts every day so that they can put on enough weight.
The feeding tube of lettuces is carefully lowered into the pool.
Aramana and Luisa eat more than half their weight in fruit and vegetables a week, including 50 lettuces a day.
Underwater, one of them chomps on a lettuce.
Before the manatees can be released, the team needs to ensure that they're in good health. Manatees are aquatic mammals that have lungs and breathe air, so if managed carefully, they can survive out of water. Dr. Antonio Rivera has learned to be a highly versatile vet. As well as helping the parrot recovery program, he's been working with the manatees for 15 years.
A manatee is rolled over.
Today, he will drain a small abscess on Aramana's back. To carry out this surgical procedure, the team will need to turn him over onto his belly. But he's not so keen on the idea. Manatees do not always respond well to sedation. So Tony's team use a group hug to restrain him during surgery.
We do get on top of the animals and we wrestle them down. So we had 13 of my students and technicians on top of the animal.
Tony's holding a surgical instrument.
We're gonna open Aramana's abscess to drain. If we do not open it, then it's gonna keep building up and building up, and it's not gonna be able to cure. So we have to open it with a blade.
Okay, boy.
He inserts the blade.
Using a sharp scalpel on a bucking manatee is dangerous. One slip could be costly.
He presses on the abscess and wipes away the emerging gunge.
For people that haven't seen this, it's kind of disgusting. It is like a big pimple.
Thick white pus oozes out.
Adam Anar's abscess is worse than Antonio expected. He's going to have to drain the infection.
I have to make a larger opening there.
The manatee bucks. He manages to cut out a hard white lump.
Adam Anar is becoming stressed. He hasn't taken a breath for over a minute.
Unlike land mammals that breathe all the time, marine mammals are voluntary breathers. So actually, if you put them out of the water, their nostrils will be closed, and they have to think to be able to breathe.
We may have to stop for a short time, and hasn't been breathing like we want to.
They pour water over Aramana's nose to mimic the feeling of surfacing for air, in the hope that he will take a breath. He could die if he doesn't breathe soon.
Suddenly, his nostrils flare open.
Much to the team's relief, he starts breathing.
Okay, we're done.
Tony is hoping Aramana will recover quickly so he can be returned to the ocean.
He inspects the incision.
We have to change protocol, providing the antibiotics orally, which is a challenge. But also we have to clean that wound. If we slack off, then we're not going to have a releasable animal.
For now, Aramana is content, playing in the water as his pool fills up.
He lies on his back under the jet of water. Now a wide expanse of bright blue ocean.
The warm tropical waters surrounding Puerto Rico are some of the richest in the Caribbean.
A pod of dolphins twisting and turning in the clear waters. Then a shoal of black fish, hugging the seabed.
They're home to coral reefs and other precious oceanic life.
A large turtle glides gently through the sea.
5 threatened species of sea turtles can be found in these waters.
A turtle pokes its head up above the surface. On a boat, a man is pulling on a wetsuit.
Carlos Diaz is a world-renowned turtle conservationist.
He plunges backwards into the water wearing a snorkel and mask.
He captures critically endangered hawksbill turtles as part of a research program that's helping to save the species. Hawksbill turtles are a valuable commodity, prized for their shells and meat.
He's caught one.
Carlos gathers evidence to help make laws to protect them.
He measures the turtle while his colleague takes down the numbers.
When we started our work 25 years ago, we started with the hawksbill turtle, which is a very rare species, it's critical endangered. And there were many gaps in its biology that we were able to help answer.
Okay, 5.6.
We learn things about the growth rate and how fast those animals can mature that tell us, you know, how many turtles will be in the future or if it's feasible to harvest them or not in a sustainable way.
Carlos provided vital evidence to support a new international agreement to ban hawksbill turtle shell trade. Since the ban, their numbers have been rising steadily in key nesting areas. But Carlos isn't stopping here.
Now that the turtles are coming back, that means that we will have more interaction with humans because we share some of their areas. We share nesting beaches. We share the reef because the men wants to do marinas and want to do port. And there's a lot of problem with habitat degradation.
Sunset over a beach as the waves roll in.
Carlos is now turning his attention to one idyllic stretch of beach where another species of vulnerable turtle lays its eggs. Dorado Beach is one of the most important nesting sites for leatherback turtles in the whole Caribbean. Unfortunately, this beach also attracts property developers keen to cash in on its natural beauty.
The nighttime waves wash over a turtle making its way up the beach.
For now, leatherbacks still haul their enormous bodies out of the water to nest at night. These turtles can weigh over half a ton and measure over 6.5 feet.
Leatherbacks are amazing. In the old days, they were considered sea monsters. They are the largest turtles in the world. It's a big animal. Some people compare it with a Volkswagen.
He kneels beside an enormous turtle in the sand.
Using only her back flippers, this female will dig a hole over 2 feet deep. Without ever seeing what she's making, she delicately creates a chamber.
She digs into the wet sand with one of her back flippers.
They manage to make a perfect hole, basically like a bottle, you know, that it have a neck and then suddenly become wide.
She deposits more sand onto a growing mound behind her.
And then she will start laying the eggs.
Glistening white eggs drop into the sand.
Leatherbacks lay about 80 eggs per nest. Each egg is almost as big as a tennis ball. They will hatch in 2 months' time. Once her eggs are laid, she gently presses sand into the hole.
She inches her way back along the sand.
She then returns to the ocean and has nothing more to do with them.
Waves lap over her.
In his fight to protect leatherback turtle nest sites, Carlos must occasionally swap his flippers and snorkel for trousers and a shirt. He's presenting the case in the Puerto Rican courts.
He takes a seat and says, "Good evening, Carlos Diaz, Department for Natural Resources." There is no doubt amongst scientists that this is a highly important sanctuary for this species of sea turtle, which is endangered throughout the Caribbean and Atlantic. So a designation of this magnitude would mean the species will continue.
Carlos isn't the only person to give evidence. The judge's verdict will decide whether or not the turtle nest sites will be protected. Without this intervention, Dorado Beach could be sold to the highest bidder, leaving the turtles with an uncertain future.
Low clouds clinging to the rainforest.
Puerto Rico's natural habitats are under constant threat from one dominant species. The human population here has doubled in the last century. Now, after years of neglecting their environment, many Puerto Ricans want their island to be green again. Today, more than 60% of the island's forest has started to recover.
A waterfall, spilling water into a small pool in the midst of the rainforest.
Many of the spectacular native species are being given a chance to thrive once again.
A tiny bird with a green head, then a black millipede, and parrots sitting in a tree.
Some, like the Puerto Rican parrot, have been rescued from the edge of extinction. At the breeding center, the infertile female and her new parrot partner have settled in to being foster parents.
Three eggs sitting in their nest.
The female has been incubating the adopted eggs as if they were her own. Now, on the grainy monitors, the team watches as her eggs start to hatch.
A tiny parrot hatches out of one of the eggs.
The technique of sneaking fertile eggs under good mothers has dramatically improved the number of chicks that they've been able to hatch.
The chick pushes itself out of its shell.
Back in 1979, the first chick was ever produced in captivity. And after that, a good year for the program was maybe one or two chicks per year. When you look at right now, as of today, chick number 43 of the season just hatched this morning.
We are very excited because this guy, in about 2 months, it's gonna be a fledgling, and probably within the next couple of years, it's gonna be a free-flying Puerto Rican parrot, another one for the wild.
The foster mother has come back into the nest.
While the new chicks are enjoying their home comforts, last year's hatchlings are now juveniles, living as a flock in the main aviary.
A couple flap their blue-tipped wings, flying underneath the netting roof and landing on a high perch.
We call this cage flight school because this is the first big step before they are finally selected for their release group.
Releasing this flock could boost the wild population of 200 parrots by more than 10%.
They cling to the wire netting.
Here we have Pinkheart. Pinkheart is a one-year-old male and seems to be one of the best candidates for the release group. Before we installed the dog tags, we used beer caps. And one bird that was identified as Heineken and another bird start showing some behavior as a pair. They are flocking together, flying together, spending a lot of time together, and they will be released together into the wild.
Three of the team are heading out to the aviary.
Heineken, Pinkheart, and the whole flock receive regular training to build up the strength of their wing muscles in this aerial gym.
When you have a group of birds in captivity, you got fresh water every day, fresh food every day. The only thing you gotta do is just wake up in the morning, stretch your wings, get the food, and forget about the rest of the day. Well, we don't want that to happen to the birds we're going to release into the wild. We don't want them to become couch potatoes.
It's not just about exercise. If they're to make it in the wild, they must learn to avoid predators.
When a hawk attacks a group of parrots, we have been able to time how long it takes them to kill a parrot. And usually, if the parrots can fly for more than a minute and 30 seconds, the chances for the hawk to get them will be very, very, very low. So we want to make sure that they can fly over 3 minutes without losing their stamina. So that's why it looks like we are harassing an endangered species. We are not doing that. On the contrary, we are making sure they will survive in the wild.
Dos, uno, vamos.
Time is up for today's training. Heineken and Pinkheart's flock is almost ready to be released into the wild. If they remain strong, they will be freed in just a few weeks' time.
A full silver moon in a black sky.
At dusk, another creature is taken to the sky.
Bats circling.
Across the island, the mouths of caves erupt with a nocturnal exodus. 13 species of bat are found in Puerto Rico. 300,000 live in this one cave alone. But another animal has been waiting for this moment too. The Puerto Rican boa.
Its tongue flickers out, sniffing the air as hundreds of bats flit about.
It's too dark for the snakes to see the bats, but they're able to sense them as they flit past.
The snake lunges for one, but misses. It tries again, opening its jaws wide. Once more, it misses and hangs down, slowly closing its jaws. On its third strike, it catches a bat.
Once they've caught one, they envelop it and squeeze out the bat's last breath. There is no escape.
The bat's tiny head amidst the coils of the boa.
The Puerto Rican boa is one of the island's top native predators. Nowhere is off limits for these determined hunters. At the parrot breeding centre, an unsuspecting pair is dozing with two newborn chicks and one unhatched egg. In the middle of the night, the monitors record an intruder in the nest box.
The snake slithers into the nest. One of the parrots flinches, but remains asleep as the snake moves around.
Unless the parents wake up, the chicks are doomed.
The boa coils around the edge of the nest box. As it slithers underneath one of the sleeping adults, the bird wakes up.
The moment they realize the danger, they attack. Sharp beaks and talons drive the snake away.
The tiny chick is left alone in the nest.
Incredibly, both chicks and the unhatched egg are safe.
The adults return to the nest box, covering the chick.
The Puerto Rican Amazon is clearly a fighter, just as well for such a vulnerable species.
From the grainy monitor image of the parrots in their nest box to a swathe of deep pink water fringed by beaches.
On the southwestern tip of the island lies Puerto Rico's most alien landscape.
Mounds of white froth.
These are the Cabo Rojo salt flats.
A bird ruffles its feathers in the shallows.
They're a mecca for wading birds.
A black and white wading bird with long pink legs.
Species like this plover nest here.
A female sits on her eggs amidst bleached white vegetation.
Surrounded by water that is both supersaturated with salt and a rather unusual colour. The pink comes from a high concentration of colourful microorganisms that thrive in these salty conditions. Humans have harvested the salt in these salt pans for thousands of years. At the manatee pools, they use this same salt to turn fresh water into ocean water.
A huge block of salt is emptied into water.
It's been 2 weeks since Aramana started his course of antibiotics, and he's now due for a checkup.
We had to work a lot to make sure the infection went away, but it finally receded, and they have a small scar, but that's all it's left, and in time we'll barely be able to see that.
Antonio listens to the manatee through his stethoscope.
Now they must pass a crucial weight test. They need to have plenty of fat reserves while they learn how to feed themselves in the ocean. They must weigh at least 600 pounds each.
725 pounds.
Teresa is a big girl. But Aramana is smaller. And if he's not sufficiently heavy, he won't be released.
639, heavy enough.
It's good news. Tony can now make the final preparations for their release.
From a bird's eye view of the manatee centre to an orange sunrise over the sea. Waves roll into the shore.
Sunrise at Dorado Beach. 60 days after the leatherback turtle eggs were laid, tracks in the sand show that most have hatched. But there are still a few stragglers emerging.
A tiny turtle emerges from beneath the coarse sand.
These baby leatherbacks have dug their way upwards through 2 feet of sand. Seabirds patrolling the beach are always ready to strike. The baby turtles have only one option: to make a mad dash for the ocean.
Using its long front flippers to propel itself along, the turtle heads off across the beach, while more babies emerge from under the sand, sliding down a slope and setting off.
While the drama unfolds on the beach, a courtroom drama that will determine the fate of future turtle generations is reaching its climax.
A woman says, "I fully support the designation of this nesting ground for leatherbacks as a nature reserve."
The local community loves their turtles. But the decision whether to protect the beach still hangs in the balance.
A girl says, "If we lose the leatherback, there won't be any predators to control the jellyfish population. Overpopulation will occur, and we won't be able to enjoy the beaches." As one of the babies reaches the sea, a man says, "Protection will increase the economic potential, attracting tourists who are interested in the turtles." A girl says, "I'm here today representing approximately 1 million Puerto Rican children because I want a green Puerto Rico, a hope to prolong the species."
The local people have presented a compelling case, and the court declares the beach a protected zone.
As everyone applauds, Carlos grins.
It's very important because this beach will be now protected, especially from urban development and light pollution.
In the future, when these hatchlings are adults, they'll be able to return to Dorado and find a safe haven to lay their own eggs. Back inland, another nest of hatchlings is growing up fast. In just a few weeks, the foster parents' adopted brood has developed from bald, blind, helpless hatchlings to chubby chicks, and are now demanding juveniles.
With budding green feathers.
Soon, they will grow feathers. And it won't be long before they're moved into the aviary to learn how to fly.
A trolley is pushed into the aviary.
But first, this year's class in the flight school must graduate.
A parrot is caught in a blue net and tagged.
Every parrot that's about to be released will be fitted with a radio transmitter so Hafid's team can track them in the wild.
Crimp it down.
24 of the parrots have made the grade. But there are always a few high school dropouts.
Some of the birds, like the case of Pinkheart, he didn't make the cut. His feathers were not in perfect condition. The bird was not flying properly. His landing skills were not the best.
He flounders as he lands on the aviary netting.
And he was overpreening a little in certain areas of his body. So we're gonna keep that bird under training for another year and see if we can successfully release him next year.
Delicate sunlight pierces the clouds above an undulating landscape.
After a month acclimatizing at a secret location deep in the rainforest, the day has come for Heineken and the successful graduates to be released.
A man climbs a ladder, propped up against the outside of the aviary, then lifts up a flap of the wire netting.
Once you open the cage, you are wondering what's going to happen. How are they going to behave? Are they going out of the cage fast or slow? It's time, okay, place your bets. Who's going out first?
One of the parrots comes to perch on the rim of the opening, while another clambers round onto the outside of the wire netting.
Then you've got the sudden movement.
A parrot flies out into the rainforest. Then, one by one, the other parrots follow.
You see this magical blue carpet just taking off.
First one bird flies out, followed by another. They land on a man-made perch in the forest.
It's just amazing when you can see their bright colors finally flying free in the wild.
More birds escaping the aviary and flying out into the trees.
The release introduces 24 new parrots into the wild. Heineken is still with his partner. Hafid is optimistic that they will soon be raising their own family. These Puerto Rican parrots almost became extinct, but thanks to the breeding program, they're making a remarkable comeback.
This year, we got over 700 parrots in the wild or being bred in captivity. We are going to have thousands of them within the next 50 years.
A parrot turns its head on a perch.
At the Manatee Centre, Aramana and Uisa's pool is being drained for the last time.
This is the morning. Everybody is anxious. We need more coffee. Everybody's gonna come here in a couple of minutes and start working.
In true Puerto Rican style, everyone wants to help the manatees. Antonis used this to his advantage. The National Guard, the Department of Natural and Environmental Resources, the police force, and dozens of volunteers have all come together to move the manatees. Once the manatees are safely loaded onto the military trucks, the convoy has an 11-mile drive to the beach. This is the last big hurdle before their return to the ocean. The journey is stressful for all involved, especially the manatees. There's a risk they could stop breathing, or worse, suffer a heart attack.
Moving two animals that are 600 pounds is quite dangerous. They could move and hit someone, injure them. But also in the transport, these animals are fragile. They could die.
One manatee takes a breath.
Tony and his team monitor their vital signs constantly, checking their breathing and heart rate and regularly cooling them with water.
The convoy of trucks and vehicles on a main road that borders the sea.
News of the release has spread across the island, and a large crowd has gathered to give the manatees a send-off.
A large team of people ferry the manatee down to the water's edge.
Jafet and Carlos have come to lend their support on this momentous day. And vet Antonio is on hand to give the final all clear. The team attaches a radio transmitter to each manatee's tail collar so that they can be tracked in the ocean. After 1 year of being monitored in the wild, the collars will be removed.
Now a team of people in wetsuits hoist the manatee up and shuffle into the shallows with it.
Just like when you're raising a kid and when you're letting them go to college, you have to step back a little bit. That's a little bit of what we're doing right now, is that moment where they have their graduation. Their graduation is that they have been rehabilitated. Now they're going to college.
At last, the moment they've all been waiting for.
The manatees released into the sea.
He's free.
The manatee hangs in the water for a moment while the team applaud.
This is the culmination of 5 years dedicated rehabilitation.
The second manatee is ferried into the water.
Hopefully they will become a couple. And that is what is important in terms of conserving the species. And in a very, very reduced population of 500 to 700 animals, every animal counts. So if Juiza lives to her full life expectancy, she can contribute potentially 20 more manatees to the population in Puerto Rico. And in a dwindling population, small population like this, that is a huge help.
The two manatees glide slowly up to the surface to take a breath.
Luisa and Aramana are finally in the ocean together. There's just one thing left to do. Celebrate.
We've been with them for so many years now, all day, all night at the beginning, and you get attached to them. For all that, this is the best.
I will probably remember this day for the rest of my life. I'm really excited. I've always wanted to work at this since I was very young, so this was one of the best days of my life.
Luisa and Aramana will acclimatize in this fenced-off bay. Then, after 3 months, the gates will be opened and they'll be free to explore the wild ocean.
This day is amazing. This is a beautiful day. It's a day of achievements.
This is a great day for conservation, which is really what this is all about.
The two manatees hanging in the water, just above a thick bed of seagrasses. Nighttime in a bar.
For the manatees, parrots and turtles, as well as the scientists that study them, it's been an exceptional year for wildlife conservation in Puerto Rico.
The team are all chatting over some beers.
But the team know that their work is not finished.
For many years, Puerto Rico's natural resources and environment have been abused. But now we have turned the corner, and there are numerous organizations working together to save the wildlife.
We are working to get rid of our own jobs. Hopefully, we will get to the point that we will have so many birds that we will not need an aviary. And I hope this will happen to many, many other species.
The key for the future survival of Puerto Rico's natural wonders is the awakening of the island's people to its unique wildlife.
When you see people that used to eat turtles helping you out, kids going to a public hearing, or when you get politicians that support you, you know, then you feel that things are moving on. It's difficult, but we try, you know, we try, and we don't quit.
Baby turtles propelling themselves across the sand. This year, around 15,000 baby leatherback turtles hatched at Dorado. The released parrots are starting to breed. Aramana and Uisa escaped the sea pen. Both are thriving in the wild.